For doctors and many other health professionals, the human body remains the focus of investigation and intervention on a daily basis. And for this reason, the study of anatomy is seen as essential to medical training and practice. But the teaching and study of anatomy has undergone many changes in recent years. And joining us this morning to help us understand the significance of these changes and how they might impact future generations of doctors is Dr. Barry Berg, professor of anatomy at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Berg. Thanks for coming in.
It's good to be here.
First, I understand you are about to retire this year after 41 years of teaching at Upstate. Now, that's true dedication. And I guess you've probably got a lot of stories to tell.
I have a lot of stories to tell. I don't know that we have time for them.
Well, maybe we'll get one or two in as we go forward. But before we begin, help us understand, what does a professor of anatomy actually do in a medical school? Who are your students?
That's interesting. I think I'm very lucky and not the typical professor, because when you teach in a medical university, a medical school, you're asked to do three things: service, teaching, research. I've not done a lot of research. I've been very fortunate that I spent my career teaching and working with students. I teach medical students primarily, physical therapy students, and I'll do a lot with the physical medicine and rehab residents, and a fellow pain fellows.
So that's pretty wide variety of people.
Yeah.
And obviously, as we get into it, it sounds like those people all need to understand anatomy.
Yeah, yes, they do.
So, as I said, you see the physical therapy students. Do you see physicians assistants as well, or mostly med students?
Well, we have here at Upstate, we have two anatomy courses for medical students, a fall course and a summer course. In the summer, we have in the same lab, the anatomy lab, medical students, physical therapy, and PA. So I help out a little, but it's not my primary. My primary responsibility in the summer is to the physical therapy.
So the question, I guess, is do you see a difference?
Oh, yes.
Both in who the students are and also, go ahead. So yeah, what differences do you see?
Medical education is changing quite a bit. And I think students coming in have so many competing issues to deal with that where anatomy fits into their education and their priorities can be questioned.
So in other words, they may not place as much value.
Many of them don't know what they're going to go into. They're focused more on getting through the courses. Where a physical therapy student, unless they've been on another planet, really see the connection between anatomy and their professional activities.
That's a very interesting point.
So it's the motivation is a little different.
So it's higher, is what you're saying?
Different. Okay. There's more a direct connection.
Yeah, it seems to me, as I recall, I have a lot of people in medicine in my family, and I have two boys who went through medical school, and my husband. So I remember a lot of conversations about the whole program of anatomy and the study of anatomy. And I think some people approach it where it's just a lot of memorization, and others seem to embrace it as a topic of great interest and even fascination.
Years and years ago, eons, I was teaching the summer anatomy, and my approach has always been a more clinical, functional approach. And one of the students came up to me and said, "I thought anatomy was just memorizing bones and muscles. You're asking me functional questions." And to me, that's really the basis of anatomy, is how do you take the inert structures that one sees in a cadaver, for example, and move it into the realm of medical practice. And to do that, I've had a lot of help from a lot of clinicians. This is how we practice. This is how we use it. this is how it would be good to teach it.
Actually, I think that makes the most sense of all. I mean, it gives a real relevance to it.
And it's something that builds on itself. So I think that's a good way, and that's the way a lot of programs are.
That's going. Wonderful. So that's a main foundation. It's a fundamental.
That's right.
Tell us just briefly, how did you get interested in this? What's your background? I mean, how did you become an anatomy professor?
You want the real story?
Yeah, but we're going to run out of time.
Okay.
In the little bit of time, we've got about a minute and a half.
I was a physical education major. I took my first anatomy course. We dissected cats and pigs, the fetal pigs. And I thought it was fascinating to be able to see how the body is put together. So I talked to people and I majored in anatomy.
Amazing. So you too were interested from a PT point of view or a physical?
Physical education. I was interested in how the body is structured to function the way it does. And I was fortunate I got the opportunity to go to UCLA. I got in their doctoral program. And
the rest is history.
The rest is history.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's really incredible. And obviously, did you want to become a doctor yourself? Or?
You mean an MD?
Yeah.
I am a doctor.
No, I know you're a doctor.
I'm
no,
sorry.
I apologize.
Okay.
I meant an MD.
Yeah. At some times, I really wanted because I actually really wanted to be a physical therapist.
Oh, interesting.
But I volunteered in a hospital for a week.
That did it for you.
I was with very old, very sick people, young kids who were very sick. And
it wasn't for you.
I didn't know the breadth of it. So
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because we have to take a short break, but we'll be right back with more from Dr. Berg, so please stay with us. Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen along with Dr. Barry Berg. And we're talking about the teaching of anatomy to healthcare professionals. So you've been teaching anatomy here at Upstate Medical University for over 40 years. So you've kind of seen a lot of changes in the curriculum. And before the break, you were saying how you have stressed the clinical aspects of anatomy. So it isn't simply memorizing bones and muscles and nerves, but what the application of these things or how the body functions. Tell us more about that.
Well, when I first came here over 40 years ago, the basic curriculum was anatomy, physiology, biochemistry. There are about five or six courses in the first 2 years. So you had a lot of time. At one time, we had over 300 hours to teach anatomy. Now it's down to about 140 hours because you have a lot of other courses that come into it. In addition, we also teach embryology and radiology. So when a student comes here, when the student finishes our anatomy course, they know the structure, they know how it developed, and they know how to interpret structure in images.
Wow.
And
is that common within?
In a lot of schools it is. A lot of schools, yes. Because very few physicians, other than a pathologist or maybe a surgeon, are going to look into the body again the way you do in dissection. But you're going to have to know how to interpret what's going on inside. And there are two basic ways. One is through imaging. The other is through palpation, surface anatomy. So we've stressed that in our courses.
That sounds very. And so how long has that been going on where you've had these 10 years
or so.
Okay, so it's fairly new.
It's fairly new, and we're still working on it. We're still updating it. But we've had a lot of help with that from the clinicians. And there have been three or four clinicians at this institution who have really made a difference, at least in my approach of teaching.
That's wonderful. So you think these changes in terms of the embryology and the radiology aspects, in other words, being able to understand the images you might look at, those changes have made a huge improvement, do you think, in the training of your students?
I think so. Not universally felt, but I think so. national boards think so because there's an awful lot of imaging on step one, the exam. But I think to give a first-year student an opportunity to learn what the heart looks like, to be what the lungs look like, to be able to see that in a dissection, to understand a little bit about the disease process, and to be able to look at an image and begin to interpret that image. I think they come out with quite a bit, much more than they came out with when I first started.
Well, also what makes sense to me is if you're also understanding the embryology and how the structures develop, then you're seeing it in a cadaver, but then you're also seeing it in vivo. If you're doing the imaging, you're seeing it in a living structure. It's got to be almost the complete picture.
I think it is, or at least as complete as we can do in the beginning, and it gives a great basis upon which to build everything after.
How has the fact that your time has been cut back adversely affected your teaching? Or has it?
I don't know that it's adversely affected the teaching. You've had to be more creative. People tell me the anatomy of the body hasn't changed in eons. And that's true. But the way we teach it has changed. And we don't have the time to go through what we used to. So you have to be more efficient. You have to be more creative. You have to put more of the onus on discovering basic information on the student, and you can guide them. But providing an opportunity to apply the information in a very relevant way is, I think, the way to go.
Just going back to something I asked you at the beginning, is do you see that the value of it as well as the interest on the part of the students does vary with their potential area of specialty or interest area?
Yes.
In what ways?
Well, a lot of students feel, why do I have to know this? What's it going to do to me? And I wish I had a dollar for every student who goes through the clinics and then comes back and says, boy, I'd love to have learned this again. And I said, yeah, it would be wonderful, but you can't interpret. You coming into medical school, you don't know whether you're going to be a psychiatrist, a pathologist, a neurosurgeon, and to get all this information thrown at you, not only from anatomy, but from every course, makes it very difficult. That's why I like the nice thing about PT.
Because they're very focused.
They've made their career choice. The students make that choice, I'm going to be a doctor. Okay, now what kind of doctor are you going to be? And so we try to give them a broad approach, and then they can go in more depth.
Would it make sense, and I don't know whether it's happening elsewhere, would it make sense to give them opportunity for clinical exposure along the way, you know, as simultaneous to the study?
Sure, and they get that.
Okay, they do. So that they're
going to get more. But that's a big part, is they get the clinical exposure. They work with physicians. They see certain disease processes. And at least for my basic view, to be able to do a good physical exam requires a good understanding of basic anatomy.
And I agree.
That's how we try to do it.
Well, I think that's excellent. So you've been teaching so long, you must have learned a lot from your students over the years. I mean, I know they've learned a lot from you. So can you think of any lessons that you would
want to
highlight?
Few things I would like to. One of the things that I learned is that medical students are not a homogeneous mass. They don't all look alike. They don't all come from the same backgrounds. And many of them come here with a strong desire to learn, but they're encumbered by the baggage that comes with them. And helping them get through, and you see a lot of that in anatomy because it's their first course. And also, it stresses them a bit to have to deal with the body of a dead human being.
Absolutely.
And some of these issues come up, and working with them is something that I think we in anatomy do very well.
So when you say baggage,
I don't mean that in a real...
Not in a negative way, but
they come in financial problems.
I see. So a lot of stresses.
Family problems, yeah. A lot of stresses.
Yeah.
That they try to hide or deal with as they're dealing with the curriculum. But sometimes it gets overwhelming.
It's interesting because, again, I have some personal experience having children who have done it. And I can remember that my youngest child, who was an incredibly capable student, found not the work of not the study of anatomy, but the actual engagement in the dissections, yes, especially when it came to the head and the neck and the face, upsetting. And how I can understand if you're a sensitive person and many people go into medicine to help other human beings, that can be a jarring kind of experience.
Yes, it can. And that's why we do that head and neck area last. The hardest part, I know the hardest part for some students who have lost a parent.
That makes a lot of
sense.
Then
have to go into the room. And usually what happens, those people will take a break from anatomy and take it the next year.
That makes a lot of sense, and that's very sensitive, I think, on the part of the school and on your part. Where do your cadavers come from?
People who die.
Okay.
We have one of the largest, one of the better willed body programs. We are licensed by the state of New York to conduct what's called the non-transplant anatomic bank. All of our cadavers are donated, primarily by people in the central New York region.
Mm-hmm. You know, with the scarcity of organs for transplant, I know this is not your area of expertise. Have you any thoughts how you might increase that
Availability? I think, yeah, it's a difficult subject because nobody wants to talk about death. But I think education is the best way to educate people about the possibilities. And if the inevitable happens, what better way to make the person who passed away more meaningful by letting another person live?
Yeah.
And I think the education part is probably the best way to go.
I agree. So you only have a little bit of time left. How are you feeling about your new direction? What are you going to do once you retire? What are some of your thoughts?
I'm going to relax. I'm going to catch up on reading. I'm going to visit.
Have you got some hobbies that you're going to pursue that you haven't had time for?
One of my biggest hobbies is wine tasting.
Oh, lovely.
And I can do that anytime, anywhere. I just mean I have to get up and go to work later.
Right.
I want to spend more time traveling. We haven't done an awful lot, so.
I think that's always something that's wonderful, a wonderful adventure to look forward to. And
I'm excited.
I wouldn't be surprised if they pull you back here from time to time. I keep hearing the stories of the revolving retirement door.
I'm hoping. There are certain things I really, really would love to continue to do.
Well, it makes all the sense in the world with your wealth of experience and everything you've offered so far.
Well, thank you.
Well, we wish you all the best, and thanks for sharing your thoughts and all your insights with us this morning. We'll be right back right after the news with more HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.